Jerry Eliason is a shipwreck hunter who most recently, about a year ago, discovered the wreck of the Henry B. Smith in Lake Superior, 100 years, nearly 100 years after it was sunk in a November storm. And we spoke with Jerry here on the Roadhouse about that discovery last year. Now, he and his group are embarking on a new project to try to find the first German U-boat, U-656, sunk by American forces in World War II in the Atlantic, just south of Cape Race, Newfoundland, Canada. Jerry now joins us from his home in Cloquet. Jerry Eliason, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Hi, yeah, thanks for inviting me back.
Yeah, you're welcome. We're glad to have you back. You do some interesting things, and you get asked back, see. So we're aware that you're doing some interesting things here. And I think before we start into the details of your project and the plan about it, I want you to tell us about this German U-boat U-656 and its sinking. Why don't you give us a thumbnail sketch of what happened and why the ship is at the bottom of the ocean?
Shortly after Germany declared war on the U.S. in December 1941, essentially the entire fleet of German U-boats available, about 30 of them at the time, were sent over to the east coast of North America. And the news was actually a government cover-up. They didn't want people to be scared. But our merchant ships were getting sunk right and left up and down the coast from the tip of Florida all the way up to Newfoundland. And we didn't have a convoy system then. And all these the U-boats were just knocking out our ships like crazy. They did about 60 of them in a relatively short time.
So what happened to doom this particular one? Since it's the first one.
Yeah, well, the Germans were ahead about 60-0 at the time between Canadian and right. U.S. ships. And the U-656 was on patrol off the southern coast in Newfoundland, and a Lockheed Hudson flown by Ensign William Tapuni and crewed by a man that I've had the privilege of meeting, Truett Hawley, were on routine patrol out over the Atlantic, and they were heading back toward base at Argentia and spotted this U-boat on the surface and dove in and dropped depth charges on it. And immediately oil started boiling up from the depth charge attack. And the Lockheed Hudson was almost out of fuel, so they had to head back to Argentia Naval Base to refuel. And then they came back out leading another group of airplanes while they and spotted the oil slick. The oil slick was still coming up, so they dropped some more depth charges. And then the following day, two destroyers, the USS Gleaves and the USS Bernadou, went out to the oil slick and dropped more depth charges.
So what do you suppose? Well, the U-boat was on the surface when they first spotted it, but then it started an immediate crash dive, I gather.
Yes, yeah, it was when they spotted the plane, but the ship or the aircraft that was coming in, the Lockheed Hudson, had the sun behind it, and that was what they were trained to do, is try and keep themselves hidden. So the U-boat didn't spot them until it was too late when the depth charges were dropped from the airplane. In the logbooks of the airplane, that said they could see the entire U-boat except for the tip of the bow under the surface.
So, and when the ships came back a day or two later, was the U-boat still functioning at that point?
No. There was still oil coming up. Still bunker oil and diesel fuel coming up from the same location. As a matter of fact, they kept going out and checking the site for a full week. Of course, unfortunately, back in those days, they didn't have LORAN or GPS, so they were just kind of eyeballing about where they were relative to the rest of the world.
Huh.
Which makes getting back to that exact.
Yeah. So, and that's the spot you're trying to find, which, had they had modern navigational equipment, would have been much easier, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that was one of the things that I talked to Truett Hawley about. Truett, there's a picture available that my cousin got for me at the National Archives in Washington that Truett Hawley took after the plane spun around. He was hanging down underneath the belly of the airplane, pointing toward the tail, and you can see some of the landmarks off in the distance.
Oh.
But Truett took that picture, and remarkably, he had never seen that picture himself until I met him last September and gave him a copy of the picture he took.
I want to get to that in just a second here, your contact with those guys. But let's just summarize a little bit. The date this happened was March 1, 1942.
Yes.
And how many German sailors were estimated to be on that U-boat?
They had about 55. That was a typical U-boat crew at the time. The entire crew list is available.
You have a plan for if you find that U-boat, what you're going to do about that crew list. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, we plan on leaving a plaque there honoring the lost German sailors and the American crew members that put it there.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about what you found out about, what you learned about the guys on the plane that you actually met. Tell us about how that happened.
Well, last September, we located a wreck that we'd been looking for several years off of Thunder Cape in Canada called the Scotia Dock. And that went down in 1953, same year I was born. But I was assuming that there would still be some crew members of that vessel still alive. So the reporter for the Duluth News Tribune, Andrew Kruger, who was doing the story, I asked him if he just thought he could find anyone, and he said that he would try. So after a day or two passed, I asked Andrew if he'd had any luck finding any crew members, and he said no, because they were all Canadian sailors, and he didn't have access to that information in Canada, but he could find just about anybody in the U.S. So I said, well, Andrew, I got a challenge for you. Impress me. I'm going to give you three names of crew members who were on the Lockheed Hudson. One of them we knew had died. The captain of the plane, Ensign William Tapuni, was killed in the Pacific Theater with just a month or two left in the war. Actually, he was sank another submarine, a Japanese submarine, in the Philippines, but he was shot down by anti-aircraft at the same time. But anyway, within a few hours, Andrew got back to me and said, I think I found one of the guys you were looking for. Truett Hawley lives in Orange, Texas, 95 years old. So I got on the phone, gave him a call, and said, are you the Truett Hawley that sank the U-boat off of Cape Race, Newfoundland, March 1st, 1942? Yeah, that'd be me, he said.
And so did you actually go meet him?
Yes. My son lives in Austin, Texas, about 250 miles away. So it was kind of tenuous for a while, and I say that because Truett originally invited me to come down, and no issue, but then about 2 weeks later, I got a letter from him saying that he had changed his mind about meeting us because he was having, I guess, what we would call now post-traumatic stress syndrome. But he was having a hard time sleeping, and he was remembering all the people that he fought the war with who weren't as fortunate as he was. And he talked about being in plane crashes. He talked about other pilots in his squadron who would go out on patrol and never come back. Mm-hmm. Presumably, got lost out over the ocean, didn't know how to find their way back.
But he did finally agree to talk
right,
to you.
Yeah. Yeah, when I got...
When you gave him the photo.
Yeah, when I told him that... Well, I certainly want to respect your privacy, but I do have my plane ticket down to visit my son, so when I get down there, I'm just going to give you a call and see if you changed your mind. And well, when I did, he said, yep, things are going good now. His wife was gone during that stressful time he was having when he couldn't sleep, so I think that was part of it.
What does he think about your effort to find this ship?
He is all for it. And we have some...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about why you're so interested in this particular wreck.
Well, the first of anything, the last of anything, the biggest of anything, the smallest of anything,
mm-hmm.
all those superlatives always are something that, you read that and you see that, and we would like to find that. And we would like to find it while Truett is still with us. Another person who we met along the way to on our search for U-656 was Frank Campano. He was a sailor on the USS Cleves, and we got to spend a whole day visiting with Frank, and it was just remarkable. Some of the things you could just see when he was telling us the story about it, that he says, I can still smell that diesel fuel out there. That diesel fuel was a foot thick, and we could just—I can still smell that.
Well, I can tell that those contacts inspired you even more to try to find this thing.
Yes, and sadly, Frank passed away about a year after
met him. And you've actually been out there already twice before, in 2010 and 2012, looking for the boat, right?
Yes.
What makes you think you'd be successful the third time?
Well, in shipwreck hunting, you haven't failed till you quit trying. So that's one of our mottos. We in the process of finding the Henry B. Smith, we came up with some breakthrough methods in shipwreck hunting. I think using data from aerial magnetic surveys. Unfortunately, the data that we have access to via the Freedom of Information Act that we can get for free is too coarse to pick up all wrecks. We find that about 25% of the steel wrecks out in Lake Superior we can see in the magnetic data, but 3/4 of them you can't see because the planes didn't pass close enough. So we do have one target identified as a good magnetic target to go out and check, but then we're hoping that we could get a company that does aerial magnetic surveys to search the area for us, so we could just go out and drop our cameras and check use our sonar to check a few individual spots instead of trying to mow the lawn or searching a big 100-square-mile area.
Oh, sure, yeah, and these magnetic this magnetic information would detect steel object.
Yeah, I estimate that if we can get the custom aerial magnetic survey funded, that we'd have a 95% chance of getting on that.
Of finding something, but isn't the problem that there may be a number of wrecks down
there?
Yeah,
well, in 2010, my son and I were so excited. First day out, we'd only been on the water a few hours, and we got a sonar target that was the right size. It looked like it could be a U-boat. With sonar, it isn't like taking a picture of the bottom with no water, unfortunately, but it had all the characteristics that were positive. So then when we got back out there with our camera, lo and behold, it was a different wreck. So we found a wreck in the Atlantic, but not the one we were looking for.
I'll remind our listeners that we're speaking here with Jerry Lassen, a shipwreck hunter who has a mission to locate a U-boat, the first U-boat sunk by U.S. forces in World War II, the U-656, off the coast of Newfoundland. Jerry, can you tell me, how are you funding this
Well, everybody who goes on the trip, everyone pays their own way. I mean, I've always found it more productive to just work a job and then save money. So everyone going on the trip pays everything themselves. Generally, it ends up being about $2,000 a piece for travel expenses.
And you're obviously not bringing your own boat out there.
Well, not this time. In 2010, we did.
Oh, okay.
In 2010, we traded our own boat out there, but we did find out that the 22-foot boat that we use on Lake Superior that's fine 2 out of 3 days in Lake Superior basically is not suitable for the North Atlantic.
I would think not. What other differences are there searching for a shipwreck in the Atlantic versus Lake Superior?
Well, in the summer on Lake Superior, you'll have less than 1 foot waves 2 out of 3 days. On the North Atlantic, the smallest waves we've ever seen out there are 3 feet, and 5 foot is kind of an average. So about the time that it's the best conditions there is the time that if we had those same conditions back on Lake Superior, we'd be heading back to shore.
If you find this U-boat, what will you do? I mean, are you gonna salvage it?
Oh, absolutely not. No. I'm affiliated with a group called the Great Lake Shipwreck Preservation Society, and our only purpose is to find, after finding wreck, our only purpose is to film them, document them. The Great Lake Shipwreck Preservation Society has been able to successfully nominate the majority of the wrecks that we've found, and they now are on the National Register of Historic Places.
What would happen if you found the U-boat? Would there be someone else who would try to raise it or salvage it or do anything with it?
No, I don't think so. I can't imagine that. You know, I could see it making a nice little American Heroes Channel.
Oh, sure.
If you're familiar with that channel,
right.
Or like the military channel. It used to be the military channel. Now it's the American Heroes Channel.
You have a Kickstarter campaign going on, Kickstarter.com, and that's strictly to raise money to try to do that magnetic search, right?
Oh, right. If we were successfully funded for that, every penny of that would be spent to fund the aerial magnetic search. And the company doing the aerial magnetic search is only doing it so cheaply. The first company I contacted wanted $127,000 to do the survey. So this one's about half that because they're interested in the project.
So, where can listeners learn more about what you're doing?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to invite anyone who's super interested to send me an email. So,
all right.
my email address is jgeliason@hotmail.com. And then I can send links to the Kickstarter thing. But then I'm not a Facebook or Twitter guy, but my son tells me that if you go to Facebook or Twitter, he has a page under U656 search.
And your son is Jared Eliason, is that correct? And he's the one in Austin. He's part of your crew as well.
Yeah, Jared was 13 years old when he was along on his first shipwreck hunt. And I think he got the bug, too. There's something special about being out there. And
yeah, you obviously have been doing it for a long time, and it's not a way to make a lot of money. It's something you do out of love of the hunt.
Oh, yeah. No, if I just sat at home and watch television instead of spending money on it.
Like the rest of us. Yeah, okay.
I probably could have retired sometime in the next century, but
Well, Jerry, we're running out of time here now, so is there anything else you want to add to what you've told the listeners?
No, well, just regardless of whether we get funded or not, we're heading out there. And as I said, everyone's paying their own way. I figure that we have a 30% chance of success without the survey. There's a 95% chance with the
survey.
If
you had it, yeah.
And if one does pledge and we aren't fully funded, there's nothing happens.
Right, that's the way Kickstarter works.
Yep.
I'm familiar with that with other projects. All right, so folks are listening out there can email Jerry at jgeliason, S-O-N, at hotmail.com, and or probably can locate it by, actually, you can where you can locate it is if you Google U-656, which is the U-boat number, you'll find a lot of information about it that way as well. Well, Jerry, good luck in your project, and thank you so much for taking time to talk to us.
Yeah, we need it. The way things are going, I figure that we have as much chance of getting the aerial magnetic survey funded as the Vikings have of winning the Super Bowl.
Oh, my. Well, you've got to be more optimistic.
Okay.
All right, Jerry, good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks
Bye.
For talking. Bye.
Bye.